Welcome to the Qumran Report, coming at you live from Skid Row Studios. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, and I'm in the studio with my co-host, Earlene Anthony. This week, we will be talking about African-American fashion designers with fashion designer and wardrobe specialist, Benacia Nas Sams and Dwayne Fallon of House of DFK Fashion. And also in our Gangs Are People Too section with Lee Shaw, we will be talking about the effect of hip-hop culture on fashion design. Nas, Dwayne, and Lee, welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you very much.
Now, before we get into an in-depth discussion of fashion design, I would like to read a general definition of fashion design from Wikipedia. And Wikipedia say fashion design is the art of the application of design and aesthetics or natural beauty to clothing and accessories. Fashion design is influenced by culture and social latitudes and has varied over time and place. Fashion designers work in a number of ways in designing clothes and accessories. Some work alone or as part of a team. They attempt to satisfy consumer desire for aesthetically designed clothing, and because of the time required to bring a garment onto the market, must at times anticipate changing consumer taste. Fashion designers attempt to design clothes which are functional as well as aesthetically pleasing. They must consider who is likely to wear a garment and the situation in which it would be worn. They have a wide range and combinations of material to work with and a wide range of colors, patterns, and styles to choose from. Though most clothing worn for everyday wear falls within a narrow range of conventional styles, unusual garments are usually sought for special occasions, such as evening wear or party dress. Now, with that, could you tell us a little about yourself and how you got into fashion design? Let's start with you, Nas.
Thank you very much, Marvin. Absolutely. I actually was blessed to venture in the fashion world, so to speak. Started out about 8.5, 9 years ago once I relocated here from Savannah, Georgia. I was stopped on Melrose and asked to shoot a Levi's campaign. From there, I started modeling, acting, and uncovered my passion for fashion, so to speak. Put it out there with a couple of photographers that, you know, I'm interested, try me out, test shoots. And then I got that big break, which was Casey from the group Jodeci. I got an opportunity to actually dress them for the album cover and upcoming promotions. And from there, things just, excuse my blew up. From there, I mean, windows of opportunity I opened. And one person led to another. I was graced with Tasha Smith, Sanaa Lathan, and so on and so forth. Just recently, within the past year, with just styling and having access to different designers, but not having just that thing that you want every time when you're going for a job is what really inspired me. Cutting up other designer things, while being that I was doing so, I might as well go ahead and start cutting up my own. Mm-hmm. And it started with the influence of Joan Jerry Couture, who I've been working with recently. I've been able to do that.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay, Dwayne, can you tell us a little about yourself and how did you get into fashion design?
Yeah, thank you. My name is Dwayne, and I was born into it because I come from a long line of tailors. My grandfather was a tailor, and his mother was she sewed, and she taught him. He went to school for it. Then he taught his daughters, which is my mother and her sisters. And then I kind of picked it up from my grandmother, and then my aunts and them seen that I could do it, and I was interested, and they kind of helped me along with it. I started when I was 15, and I went to New York. I seen what it was about. I I went to FIT for about a year. Then I came back to Michigan and got a little wanderlust. So I started traveling all over. I came out here. I studied at LA Trade Tech. I took custom tailoring. And I was just trying to make a break in the business and everything. And I just stopped because I didn't like what I seen. I didn't like what I had to become to achieve what they say, you are a fashion designer. I didn't want to lose myself. I didn't want to lose who I was and the things that I wanted to do. So I took me a little hiatus from that. And now I'm trying to establish myself again, but my way. I'm not trying to do it nobody else's way. I'm not trying to really be that super big new thing. I just feel like I want to dress people my age and better because we don't have a fashion outlet where we can wear things that are comfortable, fashionable, and look good. Being a slave to the rack is all about what the kids are wearing. And I think it looks really degrading for somebody my age, which I'm 51, to be wearing blue jeans with cartoon figures on them and T-shirts and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I'm too old for that, and it doesn't look good. Mm-hmm. So I'm bringing back continental dressing. I want to do a lot of one-on-one. That's what I did with a lot of my customers. And I want to do an exclusive line.
Okay.
So
wonderful. Now, can you, let's start off, how would you define African-American fashion design? Let's start with you, Knox.
African-American fashion design. Interesting. I didn't know it was a difference. Fashion design is fashion design, so to speak. But if I had to define African-American fashion design, I would definitely say it would be fashion that evokes emotions. Fashion that actually evokes that inner beauty. However, accentuates the human silhouette. Excuse me.
Okay. How about you, Dwayne?
Well, I think African-American fashion design is a unique way being coming up in a house of tailors and everything. I think that we as African-American people had to do it better. So we were the forefront of what the world wanted to look like. Mm-hmm. And we've strayed, I think, as African-Americans because we've gotten lazy. And the use of blue jean has gotten out of control.
Okay. Now, let's get a little deeper into that. Because later on, I want to ask you about some of your African-American designers that influence you. But, like, during the slave period, was it the African-American designers who designed most of the clothes for the so-called masters of the house, et cetera, like that?
We did everything for them, of course.
Absolutely.
I know we were designing and making.
Absolutely.
During that time.
Anyway. There, I think it was a standard across the board because, of course, even back in during the days of slavery, that's the reason why I think it's very important that you dress how you feel. For the simple fact that, we didn't always have that right during slavery. You know, it was to dress was made to denote status at a certain point, and especially during slavery. So, mm-hmm. if you was a slave, there were certain things that you had to wear or only things that you could wear. Right. And then there were things that you made for your master. So I think, being given that privilege, to really just dress how you feel, it's a wonderful thing, and I think it's taken for granted.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, what are some of the major challenges that you find in being an African-American fashion designer? Let's start with you now.
I'll start with economics. Yeah. From economics to, the resources. It's funny because, like I mentioned, I actually attended Art Institute of Hollywood, California, and it's just been recently that I uncovered Zelda Nguyen Valdez, who's been a very, well-known African-American fashion designer who's been in the industry for, like, from the 20s up until like 2000. You know, she's known for designing her first Playboy costume, made gowns for Mae West and Josephine Baker and Ella Fitzgerald. She was known for that very fitted silhouette with the fishtail at the bottom. You know, so I mean, you know, it's just, I think the resources for African Americans out there are limited, and especially if you didn't go to school. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's a lot of African Americans out there who just have that natural gift. I mean, mm-hmm. literally could just jump on a sewing machine, have a vision, and put it together. You know, and you know, unfortunately today it's a little bit, it takes the politics get involved in true talent isn't mm-hmm. revealed.
Okay. Yes. Dwayne.
And just like you said, I'm one of those who have that talent and I just put it together and do. But I was never really envious of anybody in fashion because I felt like I could do anything anybody could do. I never really studied who was doing what or whatever. I just knew what I wanted to do and how I wanted to look. And you just gave me some interesting insight about it because I think that Mae West and the people you mentioned, I love the way they dress.
Yeah.
So it had to be some type of, you know, there for me to like. Fortunately, there was an African American behind all that. So that's good to know.
Mm, what was her name again?
Her name was Zelda Nguyen Valdez.
Yes. Beautiful. Okay, now, do most fashion designers do both design and make their clothes? And how do that work? Or some design and some just make?
I think both ways, because we were just actually speaking about this, and I don't necessarily sew. However, I'm wonderful with a glue gun and a staple gun. So I can cut up and put together some things, but then I'll call in someone else to actually make a pattern for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I do it all. I do my own patterns, I do my own sewing, all of it, the whole creative process. Unfortunately, I don't put it on paper. I could never get the hang of sketching. When I was at LA Trade Tech, that was the worst thing ever. I couldn't do it. I just could not do it. So the teacher said, well, okay, show me what you can do. Well, I took a piece of paper.
Yeah.
I took me, what I would do is I would cut it out. And they said that they wanted it on paper. I'd cut it out, take what I cut out, trace it on paper, cut that out, put it together, and say, okay, here's the pattern and here's the garment.
There's the talent. That's true, too.
You know, and that got me through my pattern making thing, too, because they had that certain way that they wanted you to make patterns. And I'm like, wait a minute. You know, I do this and everything. And the teacher asked me, he said, well, how do you do? And I did what I did, and I gave him the paper pattern and showed him the garment. He gave me an A and dismissed me from the class. You know.
That's a great thing about art school. So, yeah, they recognize talent.
That's great. Now, out here in the professional world, just to use Los Angeles, for example, and just if you're trying to break in into some the big circle, do you have to take, when you present your proposal, do you have to have some kind of pattern to go along with it, with the designs? And
well, I think you have to have some type of direction, and you got to see what they want, and you have to have a target market, what you are going for.
Mm-hmm.
See, and then you have to have a business plan and show them how you're going to spend this money and how you're going to do this. You know, see, I'm in the throes of doing that with my sister because we found a grant writer. So I'm trying to get some money together so I can get me a shop going, you mm-hmm. know, get me some machines. Because when I was in New York, I worked in an outerwear factory and I seen the inner workings of how you mass produce garments. So, and then by me working with it and doing, and I'm seeing how this process is going, I know how to do that and I know how I would run my shop. See, and I would be sewing right along with them because the people that I work with, they was doing it. And it's all about piecework, you know.
Now, how important is labeling? You know, I see the little brand, your name that goes into. How important is that?
Oh.
Go ahead. Absolutely.
I think it's very important.
Very important. I agree.
You want people to know who you are and what you're doing, and you want your brand to signify you. You want people to look at that and go, okay, that's Dwayne Fallon or that's Nas. You know, so it's very important that you label your stuff, you know, let people know who you are and what they do. That's how they see, because the first thing they're going to do is when they look at it, they're going to be like, well, okay, and look at the label. Okay, this is who did it, you know.
Absolutely. I want them to say, hey, that's Banoski you're wearing, isn't it? You know, and that's the objective. If the label isn't there, then they don't know, you know, people forget exactly who it is they're wearing.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about your creative process? Can you talk about that for a while? Do you see something out in the community that inspire your creativity? How that work?
Absolutely. I mean, the creative process is exactly what it is. It's a creative process. I think you get inspirations from a lot of different things, just life in general, to be perfectly honest. And not only that, though, just emotions. Your emotions as a designer, it's just depending on, I think, where you're at. Personally, I'm influenced by the yesteryear, so to speak, the 20s, mm-hmm. The 50s, that new era, you know, where women were very feminine as it pertains to their dress, and men were gentlemen, mm-hmm. you know, clean cut. That, you know, and you can be clean cut in hip hop, clean cut in rock, clean cut in just so many different things. It's a way to do it, you know. Mm-hmm. But definitely those influences, you know, personally have influenced me. But I think it's, like I said, a number of things. It could be a building. It can be forecasts, because fashion is forecasted like 5 years out. You know, you can literally do a Google search for 2013 fashion, and it'll give you information on, from interior design, patterns, prints, you know, colors, as well as the different silhouettes. Mm-hmm. You know, right now, you know, we're seeing influences of the 70s a lot running around before it was the 80s, you know, and next year it'll be the 20s, mm-hmm. you know, and that's how do I know that? It's because it's already been forecasted, you know, as such. So it's sort of, you know, you condition out the wild, because if you didn't like pink, if I flood the stores with different shades of pink the entire summer, you're going to find a shade of pink that you actually like, because, you know, just with the senses in general, you've gotten so accustomed to pink and seeing that pink, you know, that you was able to find that color.
Okay. Your creative process.
I feel like his influences are the same as mine. I'm influenced of yesteryear, too, because my influences were the old movies, and I would see, you know, the old stars and everything, and old Hollywood glamour and all that. I really, really like that. So I, my creative process is more of a thought thing. It's more of a sight thing. It's more of an emotional thing. If I feel something, it's going to come out in a way of a garment. If I see something that I like, I'll take that detail and put my own spin on it, you know, because that's what everybody does. And when they see something, they'll take it and they'll put their own spin on it and change the details and do, and then it's yours.
Mm-hmm.
Because it all comes around. Fashion is, nothing is new. Nothing is new in fashion. It just comes around. Mm-hmm. So,
and I was thinking about what you said about the 20s, and that's a period that impressed me also with the way, because, you know, I follow the acting thing closely, mm-hmm. and it was Anita Bush. She starred at the Lafayette Players, you know, one of the first African-American stock companies in New York. And her father was a tailor. And that's how she got off into the theater. I was just thinking about that. She used to go around taking the costumes from theater to theater up on Broadway. Mm. And I also noticed how they dressed, which was outstanding. You know, Paul Robeson, Burt Williams, mm-hmm. and all of them.
Absolutely.
They could walk in 2012 and fit right in.
See, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thing.
But let me ask you this. What advice would you give someone trying to enter the business? They come to you, and a little young fashion designer.
I would definitely recommend school. And that's even if you just go to fashion school for a semester, it's some basics that you need. I mean, that even as just a celebrity wardrobe stylist, there are some basics you need. You need to understand the history of fashion. Mm-hmm. You need to know that And the reason is because you're able to create an amazing market strategy, because that's something that you should do anyway with just starting any business. You need to understand, you know, have some type of marketing strategy, you know, a target audience and how you're going to actually penetrate, you know, that group of people. You know, with, I think just with fashion, I think, sorry, I just lost my train of thought. I just lost my train of thought with that.
About education.
Yes, but education is extremely important. The basics. As a wardrobe stylist, you know, understanding fashion history, just that fashion at the break of war is a great time to come out with a new trend. Just knowing fashion history, we understand that we saw different trends occur, like the flappers in the 20s. Yes. You know, that was at the end of the war. Yes. In the 40s and 50s, that was at the end of the war. The 60s, the 70s, protesting. We saw different, you know, people became radical. So they expressed themselves through fashion. You know, so it's very, I think, important that you understand that it's just not a garment. It's just not, you know, a color. It's more than that. It's freedom of expression.
Mm-hmm. It's a statement.
It's a statement, exactly. A state of mind, to be perfectly honest.
Who you are and how you feel.
Absolutely. So I would say totally go to school. That's first step. Definitely hold on to your ideas. Start writing everything down right now. You know, all of your ideas. Just start keeping
it.
Yeah, your creative ideas. From if it's a pattern, if you're, you know, a designer, if you, whatever it is, because I think each of us have our own little thing, so to speak, that talent that you're, if you're able to actually take in touch on within, I mean, you're going to be extremely prosperous.
Mm-hmm. Well, with me, I have total recall. Anything I've ever made, I can pull it up in my mind and recopy it. Everything. So it's all in my mind and everything, because I was not all that great with writing. So it's here. And anything that I've ever made, I can pull it up, sew it again, make it over, you know. I think the important thing is to be true to yourself. I think you need to be an individual. Trends are nice, but trends come and go. I'm a classic designer. I design clothes that transcend trends. When a trend is gone, my things still hang on. I have things that I have made back in the 80s that I can put it on right now and people be like, oh my God, that is so nice. It's as old as dirt.
That's a classic piece.
well, let me ask you this. Now, did the three-piece suit, did that go out and come back in or something like that or what?
That is something that is a classic piece that will never leave. It's just like tailored garments, a nice tailored dress, tailored pants, a dress coat, all that. That'll never leave because that's a standard. And you see it throughout history. Even though we had our trends and we had our things that people were wearing that was now, people, after that trend dies, we go back to what the basics and what is true and what people will identify with. Just look at people on the red carpet and everything, the dresses.
That's who the sort of who basically set the main screen with fashion. It'd be the celebrities or music, TV, just the media in general. Yes. That's sort of, I mean, but that's like from the beginning of the time. Mm-hmm. You know, you were sort of acclaimed as a fashion designer if your garment was on a celebrity. Yes, so to speak, yes. You know, not the everyday person. Yeah. You wasn't defined by your skill set. It was more so who was wearing, you know, your brand.
Yes, because that everyday person's going to see that celebrity.
Absolutely, yeah. And they're going to want to look like that celebrity. Yeah.
And that's what we're going to do later on in our Gangs of People session. We're going to get into an in-depth discussion about hip-hop culture, fashion, influence, and all of that. Also, let me ask you this. Is it easier to design for males or females?
I mean, I think that it's, for me personally, it's actually easier for me to design for a female than a male.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason being is, I mean, you can get so creative with the female in the female body, because, you know, the female body is in so many different shapes, you know, and sizes, to be perfectly honest. and then with the male, you know, we're so conditioned in reference to what we're supposed to wear, you know, it limits that creativity, you know. But just like Dwayne was saying, you know, the trousers, the sports jacket, it's safe as long as it fit right. And plus, it, you know, you don't need a lot with a man. You know, if that suit fits right, you know, and you're well grown, I think that's all a lady's pretty much asking for.
Mm-hmm. But a female is more involved.
A female is totally more involved. I mean, colors to.
I think that a female is much more easier because the female garment is much more easier to construct. The male garment is much more in depth, detailed. The construction of it is much more harder than women, because women, you can throw a couple of pieces together, do this, but a male garment, you know, is really in depth. I mean, you got to get that zipper right. You got to set them sleeves in right. And it's got to be
those shoulders.
Exactly.
So. Okay. Now, is there a difference in designing for people of African descent as opposed to European, Asian, and other ethnic groups?
I think overseas and Asian, especially Asians, I love Asian fashion because they push the envelope and they come out with shapes and styles. See, when I was in school and everything, I studied high fashion. See, people don't know that the garment that you get is cut from high fashion. You can take one high fashion garment and get many out of that. And it's a concept thing, see. When you do concept designing and concept clothes, it is much more in depth. It's beyond what the normal person can wear, because you got to have the guts to wear, because you explore different shapes, different things, different pleats this, different cuts this, different.
Outside of whatever is forecasted. Definitely is going to be out of the norm of things.
See, I love high fashion. I love high fashion. And I like couture because it's people, they really don't understand. And when they see it, a lot of people go, but they don't understand it. But they don't understand that garment that you're wearing is a minuscule of what a high fashion designer has designed. Mm-hmm. He cut it down so you can understand it.
Well, let me ask you, is it a distinct style, just as, for example, Italian fashion designer,
yes.
French, American, Asian,
I
love,
African. See, when I was coming up in there, if I was influenced, I was influenced by the people overseas. I like the Italian designers and everything, because American designers were too boring for me. They weren't able to go outside that box, push that button, make that different shape, that style. That comes from overseas, see? And I'm like that, because you see me in something, and people, half the people are going to love it, half the people are going to hate it, and I know that I'm doing something. And I like that type of buzz around me. So I will push the envelope with my garments. I can do a traditional regular suit for people, but then I can go outside that box and create something that only I will wear, and I look good in it. So people will say, well, oh, that's nice, but I couldn't wear it. Of course you could.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, Los Angeles, the garment district, is Los Angeles really a great place to find materials?
Find materials, yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh,
that and garment. Trim, oh my God. Oh, I mean, yes. The garment district is like...
It is.
A dream come true to fashion designers.
You can go down there and
seriously
find anything. And really,
very inexpensive.
Anything that you see that's on the racks, you can go down there and find the material.
Absolutely.
And do it if you want to copy it, you know, anything. But I find that out here, they're lazy because they don't have the season. See, back home in Michigan and back east, we had the seasons. There was time for layer dressing. There was summer wear. There was fall. Out here, it's everlasting summer.
Absolutely.
You know, it's everlasting summer, so everybody's always in shorts and all that kind of stuff. But we had to put clothes on, a coat, and, you know, layer it up because it got cold, you know? And I miss that, but I still do that. A lot of people say, well, Dwayne, why are you wearing this? Because I like it. And it gets cold. So...
Now, how about fashion design for young people? What's the challenges for that?
It's really no challenge for me. You just understanding the youth, you have to understand they're going to be caught up in the trend. Definitely you want to just follow the forecast. And people watch, you know. I mean, really just go out and sort of just people watch. You can get a feel of what the youth is doing today as it pertains to fashion.
Mm-hmm. Me personally, I'm not in touch with the youth. So, I really don't care what they're wearing.
In terms of designing for?
What they're wearing is not something that I can even get into. I mean, they are pushing the envelope in an ugly way to me, because when you put in polka dot stripes and plaids together and you think you got a nice garment.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. Is this just a California, Los Angeles thing as different from other parts of the country like New York or the Midwest or the South?
It is.
Because California always
did their own thing, so to speak. Yeah, absolutely.
It is. It's very different.
Mm-hmm. However, influences from California drag into down South, Midwest, and East Coast
everybody
as well.
Everybody wants to come to LA.
City of the stars.
Exactly.
Absolutely. You know, but I mean, I would think New York, I would deem as, you know, because they're more fashion forward.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all of the corporate offices as it pertains to fashion is, you know, it's right there in New York.
You see, and they're really close to Europe.
Absolutely.
And France and everything. So everything that comes down. See, New York is 10 years ahead of the rest of the country.
In terms of fashion?
In terms of everything. I'm going to tell you, when I was there in the 80s, they were doing Walkmans and televisions that fit in the palm of your hand in the 80s. It was only, I mean, early 80s, because I went in 79, 80, 81. That's when I was in New York. And I bought me a Walkman, and by the time I got home, everybody's like, what is this you got? And then by the time the middle 80s came, it was all over the place. But it was old in New York City.
Okay, let's talk a little about the business of fashion. First of all, we have already talked about whether or not you need a degree. You suggested getting a degree. How about an agent? For a person coming out here, do you need an agent? Or is that to break into the...
I would suggest getting just some sort of PR. Some type of representation. Because you can't do it all. If you're behind a sewing machine, you can't market yourself.
Right.
You know, you can't do it all. You definitely, you know, my saying is a dream is made by a team.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, do you work as an independent contractor, or do you sign contracts with your clients? How do that work? You're dealing with individual clients.
I sign individual contracts with people. I work very closely with them. I use their own body silhouette to create the garment that they want. So it's going to look good on them, but somebody else put it on. If they don't have the same silhouette, it's not going to look good. That means it's a signature piece. Mm-hmm. See, I like to do things that are one of a kind, original. When I design a line, once you buy every piece out of that line, that's it. There's no copies. There's no nothing. You got a one-of-a-kind garment.
Mm-hmm. They help determine the expense?
Yes.
In terms of what it would cost.
I'm spoiled rotten. I come out of my house, and when I wear something, I know ain't nobody ever going to have it on. Ever.
Let me ask you this. What is the difference in designing for celebrities and designing for just everyday people?
I would like to think that there's no difference, to be perfectly honest. A person is a person. Me personally, and my goal is just as a designer in general is to touch every woman. I'm targeting an audience of 18 to 60. Okay. You get what I'm saying? And that's the reason why my influences are coming from the 20s, because if you look back at those, even the teenage girls, mm-hmm. you know, there was a flair in their femininity, you know. Now, celebrities, you'll be perfectly honest, they're everyday women. Yeah. They're everyday women who you just happen to see on television. That's or they're right. everyday women who's behind that microphone that you or that radio station. But they're really everyday women. Yeah. And because, you know, they're in the public eye and the scrutiny is heavy as it pertains to their character and what they wear, yes. they at times can be a little... you know, skeptical as it pertains to dress and what they choose to wear because of the ridicule they may get from it.
Yeah, their mm-hmm. image.
Yeah, because, and, you know, around their image. Yeah. So I would think, you know, I can say that the everyday woman would be a little easier to dress than a celebrity, but people are people.
People.
Yeah, people are people.
Okay, so let's take a break for our community calendar, and then we'll come back with our Gangs Are People 2 section, talk about hip-hop and fashion design.
This is the community calendar for the month of August. Every Tuesday from 5:30 p.m. to 8 p.m., Melvin Ishmael Johnson is teaching a Veterans Community Theater Workshop. The location is the Vortex, 2341 East Olympic Boulevard. This is near the corner of Santa Fe and Olympic. In the Metro bus number 60 and 66 stops at the corner. For more information on the workshop, you can call 323-850-4436. And Thursday, August the 9th, from 1 p.m. to 10 p.m., Drama Stage Qumran will be at the Exchange, the location, 114 West 5th Street, hosting the Arts Walk. We'll have art exhibits, artwork from the Veterans Art Exhibit, pictures from the recent stand down and the USC United University Church. Also, exhibit from the Peace Kids, Peace Art, live musical guests, open mic, spoken word artists, and much, much more. Information on the Arts Walk, you can call 323-850-4436. And on Sunday, August the 12th at 3 p.m., Drama Stage Qumran presents the Nasana Play Reading Series entitled A Dove for Lizette Malvo. This play is written by Pauletta James, and the location of the Exchange is 114 West 5th Street, Los Angeles. And for more information on this event, you can call 323-850-4436. Sunday, August the 19th at 3 p.m., Drama Stage Qumran is presenting a Black August prison form with dramatic readings from the works of Marcus Garvey, Malcolm X, Dr. King, George Jackson, Angela Davis, and more. Also in celebration of Marcus Garvey's birthday, Drama Stage Qumran will be showing a performance that was done at the Complex in Hollywood of the play Catch the Tiger. And Catch the Tiger is about Marcus Garvey. This play is written by Melvin Ishmael Johnson and was directed by Jamal McNeil. The location of the event will be the Exchange, 114 West 5th Street, Los Angeles. For more information on this event, you can call 323-850-4436. And on Sunday, August the 26th at 3 p.m., the participants from the Veterans Community Theater Workshop will be doing a performance of the stage play Surviving the Nickel. This is written by Melvin Ishmael Johnson. And the location of the performance will be the Vortex, 2341 East Olympic Boulevard, Los Angeles. And for more information on this event, you can call 323-850-4436. Just a reminder, if you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com. Attention, Early and Anthony. And once again, our call-in number for the show is 800-893-9562. Now back to our host.
Okay, thank you, Earlene Anthony. We're back with the Qumran Report. You can call in live to our show at 800-893-9562. Now, today in our Gangs People 2 section with Lee Shaw, we're going to talk about the impact of hip-hop on fashion design and its implications for our community. Now, this is a roundtable discussion, so don't be afraid to chime in. So welcome to the Qumran Report, Lee.
Thank you.
We want to get into this discussion. Before we get into that, what are your thoughts on it?
Well, you know, I don't see nothing but a logo. You know, everybody from the 20s to now had a logo, right? Using, let's start from the 20s, let's start from the mafia era. They were suited and booted, as we would say, yeah. Right? They had suits on, overcoats, hats, and shoes, yeah. Top of the line. Right, we can even go to the KKK, known for their white sheets logo. Right, then we go into the Crips, blue Ace Deuce from the '70s, Ace Deuce, high boy shirt, original 501 jeans with biscuit shoes, not tennis shoes. Right, likewise with the Bloods. So I see it as nothing but a logo, mm-hmm. even with the hip hop thing.
In terms of symbolizing, yeah,
because
the symbol.
It's in hip hop. It's not really the fashion that they're kicking. It's the words. They ain't trying to sell them fashion. They're trying to sell some words. And that's about to see. That's all it is. So if you're looking for fashion in hip-hop, you'll never find it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, before I go off into that, you just mentioned something that I thought about. I thought about when you mentioned the mafia.
Yeah.
And they always had, you know, the Italians have always been known for their, especially suits and stuff like that.
Italian.
And it was, that's interesting that you mentioned that the mafia, they wore the top of the line clothing.
And their girls were the flappers.
Talk about the
flappers, because you had not all women in the 20s dressed like flappers.
That's right.
You know, the flappers were considered to be the irrational women of the 20s, yeah. So to speak, the party girls.
Now, explain what flappers. Explain flappers.
The 20s flappers were literally the party girls. They wore the fringe dresses, and you know, you saw some fishnets,
yes,
and
they wore the Fortuny pleat dress.
Absolutely, Fortuny pleats, and you know, and not only that though, it was the first time in fashion that we actually began to see female knees.
Yes,
you know, before then we didn't see women didn't show their knees. Yeah. You know, as it pertains to fashion. So, you know.
Skirts were getting higher. People were getting bolder.
Absolutely. And it was, of course, towards the end of war.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, is when we saw that outbreak in fashion.
There's one other thing when it comes to fashion. And I don't know if the brothers at the table was around at the time in L.A. But in the late 60s, well, I say from 65 to 1969, most of the brothers in L.A. who could afford it always had their clothes tailored.
Yes, they did.
Right? Yeah. They had tailor-made suits.
That's even in Savannah, Georgia.
Because, it was all about being cool.
That's
and
right.
Being in style.
That's
so
right.
Your only style was to create your own style and go down to the tailor, make this up for me, man.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I need to be fitted right quick.
Yeah.
You see? And it was always tasteful, too.
Yeah. See, so, you know.
Right, because I remember this tailor shop that used to be next to the Cecil Hotel.
Yeah, they used them here.
Yeah.
They would, come to the tailor shop down here, go to Arthur Williams somewhere, you know, and it was so, and that was the thing of the time. You know what I'm saying? That was the logo for being cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, you was tailored down, you know, in mm-hmm. the proper manner.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I find
Dwayne, let's talk a little about, let's start off with you, because we had a conversation early talking about the impact of hip-hop culture on fashion design.
Well, I feel like it has really taken fashion down. I think it's lazy. I think it's too casual. I was watching the Essence Awards. Now, here you are broadcast around the world. And people of all walks of life are seeing you, and you know that they associate people with what you wear. And I'm looking at young black men with their drawers showing, and tennis shoes, and all that. See, that's lazy. We were the forefront in entertainment, music, and fashion. The music is terrible because anybody can get on and spit a lot of garbage on a record. It takes a real talent to create something that is entertaining across the board. Those people, those kids that's doing that, they have this image of wealth and all this because of what they're wearing, but in actuality, they fade out.
Now, how did this come about? How did they think this developed?
I think it's just like it with any fashion. I think, you know, everybody had their time because I'm sure, well, my grandma thought the way my mom dressed and the way they dressed was it was just too much. It wasn't tasteful. You know what I'm saying? And my mom thought the way that I dressed was absolutely just outrageous. However, I got best dressed in high school. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I think it's just dependent on the time. I don't even think, me personally, I love hip hop and what it does for fashion. The sad part about it is it was taken out of context. I think the whole thing with the SAG, because that was a trend. The SAG was a trend. It's been taken out of context. And you're exactly right. I agree. I think that we as people in general, we became lazy because of the SAG with our dress. Like the 80s, the Mohawk. When that we saw that for like the past decade.
That was in
decade.
The 60s.
Right, exactly. And then we saw it again in the 80s, and then we just saw it again.
We're just seeing it again now.
So it's like, it's just one of those things we see. It's modernized, but it's still the same old thing.
Mm-hmm. But see, I don't like the fact that I have to be defined as a black person by that. When people see
that's
me,
politics.
See, when people see me,
yes,
they look at me and they'll go, okay, you know, the first question they say, well, I know, you know, I'm 6'4". Oh, you play basketball. No, I don't. And then the next thing is, who's your favorite rapper? Well, I don't listen to that. Oh, well, you're not black. What do you mean? I'm not black. You know, I have a broad range of music. See, in my household, there was culture and there was all different types of music. My grandmother, she listened to classical, and my mother then wasn't able to listen to secular music. And my grandfather, he was into jazz. So there was all types of music. And in 70s, there was the rock era. I have a lot of rock music. My music collection is vast.
Let me
just speak to that real quick. And I think that's what it is. You know, it's more so, I think, the resources in making our kids aware that it's not the right way to dress. You know, you have to think about it, too. I mean, we went through a baby boom, and you have kids raising kids. So
that's what
the same influences aren't there. The same influences aren't there.
That's right.
So, you know, you have a lot of kids who just honestly do not know. And I know that just from talking to kids. I've been privileged to actually speak to kids for the past, like, 3 years through a 21 Shades by this lady, Tonya Washington. Speaking to underprivileged kids, but just kids in general as it pertains to image. And they just don't know.
They don't know.
Terms of you get feedback from
absolutely. They don't understand chivalry, you know, and everything that falls up under that because dress is part of it.
Okay.
You know, with the sagging thing, you know what I'm saying? I remember when it started. And if we use, instead of using it as a distasteful thing and see it as a message being sent to you.
Absolutely.
Right? That to help me, man. Help me.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
You didn't leave nothing from me. You ain't tell me nothing, man. Help me. Somebody please help me.
But when you try to tell them, then, they think what they're doing is right and what I'm doing is wrong.
At the same time, ain't nobody... Right, not even where I stayed in the, they wanted to be like them. Ward told me one time, he said, man, check this out. I despise you. You 50 years old, wanting to be like me. You worse than my little homie.
Who told you that?
It's one of the youngsters in the neighborhood. Yeah. I mean, you know what I'm saying? So, ain't nobody never gave him nothing, man. There was no program host. Let's go back and do a little history searching, right? After the Black Panther Party, didn't nobody tell them people what to do, what the agenda was? They had to find out for themselves. Their parents even abandoned them because they were wrapped up in the money thing. I mean, to get my money and forgot about the kid. So he began to do whatever he did, and he met some guys out there that was doing their thing the way they wanted to do it. So they joined in, right? And then now, later on, you're going to sit here and tell them you're doing the wrong thing? No, what did you give them? That's what I'm talking about. See, the message, what did you give them?
Mm-hmm. Now, as far as culture, I mean, as far as fashion design and all like that, to turn that around, I mean, what is the message? What do we give them now?
You got
what do we, as part of the whole.
First of all, we underestimate most of them youngsters. A lot of them people there. I met one of them and they said, "Man, you talk to me like he said I might be gangbanging, but I went to school. He has some intelligence. You know what I'm saying? And they're not just they're not dummies. They just need somebody to come out sincerely and help them. I think it was Tupac said, point to me, point to it, and I'll go. In his song. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Point to it, and I'll go. But if you don't point to it, he going to do what he want to do. And since he's been doing it so long now, there's very little you can tell him. But there are some who are capable of understanding exactly what you're saying and see the logic in it and move towards that. Mm-hmm. But if you come and try to be like, you know, I say, I'm not trying to separate my people any further. I'm trying to get them all back together from the East Coast to the West Coast.
And our approach, I think you can almost say anything to anybody if you know how to say it.
That's right. I think,
you know, with our kids and our youth, and especially those who are that 15, 16 age bracket, but have been taking care of themselves for the past five years. Yeah. You know, that's a little lady or a young man that you approach with respect in reference to talking about their dress, or they're going to take and rebel if they get anything other than. And it's just a mechanism for protection to rebel and sort of shut it down so that they aren't emotionally affected by what you're saying. So I think just basically approaching them with respect as it pertains to the way that they're dressed would carry up.
Well, I try to lead by example. So when I dress in how I do, I lead by example, and what I get from them is you ain't doing this and you ain't writing, that looks ugly.
Well, you know,
they don't know better.
I would have done. So I'm saying I kind of weigh in because I go everywhere, right? But I'm interested in those people in the area I stay in the most, right? And when I was telling them about this radio show and Drama Stage Coonrail and what the focus was, they were very receptive. That's why I asked about the cars when I came in here. See, if you think them people are crazy, they're not.
The kids are hungry for the resources. Hungry. They're hungry for it.
And knowledge.
Yes.
All you got to do, man.
You know, and centers that may even provide them with an opportunity to develop whatever their skill may be. Mm-hmm. They're hungry for it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now we wind it down. We'll give everybody. We're gonna do a few little closing comments. Nas, can you tell us about any other closing comments? But can you talk a little about your special event that you got coming up on October the 14th at the Bidmore?
Absolutely. Well, first off, let me, just in case I don't get an opportunity to say, let me thank Skid Row Studios and you, Melvin, for having me on the show. I really appreciate just getting an opportunity to actually talk to y'all and mm-hmm. get my name out there. Mm-hmm. I have an event this October the 14th. It's actually Joan Jerry Couture, who is a wonderful designer who I've partnered with, as well as John A. Elise, a FITM student, a top of her class, who's releasing Masterpiece, as well as myself, at the Biltmore Hotel, October 14th. From 2 to 6, and I'll be previewing my first line actually, and it's 20s inspired. There's a little 70s flair here and there. They are definitely inspirations for the 50s.
Now, how many pieces do you put out?
Well, as a designer, you can put out as many pieces as you want to put out. I'm going to showcase 11, but I want to do 15 pieces.
Male and female? And
just female to start out. Mm-hmm. However, this upcoming Monday on August the 7th, I have Etsy. I actually do a lot of vintage handmade pieces, hats, custom hats, things to that effect that I actually do. So that's going to be up on Etsy this August the 7th, as well as you can find me on eBay. But also I'm doing an event on the 12th of August, something that you all may be interested in. It's the Southern California Natural Beauty Pageant. Mm-hmm. And it's a pageant that's actually being sponsored by non-for-profits that have come together, changing the lives for women, empowering them, as well as the communities in which they serve.
And where is it? Where would it be?
And this is, I can't say for certain exactly where it's at. However, I'll give you the information, Melvin, and all your viewers, whoever chime in.
And it'll be on your website.
Absolutely. I'll definitely make it available on my website.
Dwayne, what you got coming up?
Okay. Oh, I'm not as busy as now. But
you're going
to
be.
I plan to produce a line and get out there and, you know, like I said, hit my target market.
And we've been talking about a fashion show, too.
Yeah, I'm kind of working with you and Earlene and doing that, and that would be something that I want to bring out. And if it works good, I'm taking it on the road. See, I'm going to take it to my hometown, and I'm going to take it to where I have family. I have family in Lexington, Kentucky, Staten Island, New York, and Michigan. So
let me ask you, if you take something like that on the road, I mean, do you just take your clothes?
I take the and clothes and find me a body where I go.
Okay, where you there? Okay, that's right. Get the actress and the model there, and then someone
to local talent.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so. Go ahead. Any other
and
clothes?
And I also find I'm trying to get in touch with a friend of mine that I went to school with. Her name is Jackie Mayweather. She's part of the Mayweather family. And she's also a talented designer, and I want her to be my special guest at my show. So,
is she out here in Los Angeles?
No, she's in Grand Rapids. I'm in the process of getting in contact with her now. So, and we've always wanted to work together anyway because we went to school together. And when I was in school, we was taking fashion merchandising, and I wasn't really good at it. And the teacher was like, "Well, what can you do?" Well, I just took me some fabric and I came up with this line, and they gave me a fashion show.
Okay, let's get some closing comment from Lee.
You know me, it's my passion, man, to unite, to start with Marcus Garvey and my ancestors was trying to do, and that's unite Black people all over the United States and then the world. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I know it can be done, but the people that can do it have really been alienated, and that's young folks. Because, see, one thing that people never counted on, and I don't think the FBI even thought about it until probably now, what the Black Panther Party did was they got chapters all through the United States. Through this drug thing, right, I got Crips and Bloods and all kinds of people coming out of L.A. and in California, period, all through the United States, even more so. Mm-hmm. So they've been in them places for a long time. So out of the havoc, we can reap the benefits of it. Even though it's a bad thing, we can reap the benefit of it because they've been in them places a long time. They know the local people, right? Mm-hmm. And we can just pull from there.
Okay. Thank you, Lee. Now, I would like to extend a special thanks. To our in-studio guest, Nas. Dwayne Fallon, Lee Shaw, my co-host, Earlene Anthony. Please check out our past shows of the Qumran Report on iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, skidrow.la, and dramastage-qumran.org. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report. And from your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson, may the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. Thank you very much.
Great, boy.
Great.
Thank y'all.
You're listening to SkidRowStudios.com. This is Keith Coogan. Tune into The Call Sheet Saturday nights, 8 to 9 p.m. And I promise to sound like I'm always on Quaaludes.
Got no driver's license, so we gotta get fake IDs. Robots don't got no driver's license, so we gotta get fake IDs.
I need a can of beer. I need it right now. I need a can of beer so that I can freestyle. But this grocery store clerk is getting all of it.